It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the last 9 till noon show of the week. It's Friday the 11th of July. I do hope you're very well indeed. It's great to have you on board. We've got a fantastic show for you as always. Coming up, I'll introduce the Friday panel to you, but there's that and so much more besides. We want you involved in the conversation throughout the course of the morning, of course. 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25000. Or give us a call on 074-91-25000, 074-91-25000. Emails to comments at highlandradio.com as well. Right, okay. A very good morning to Cathy Donaghy, journalist and author of Finding My Wild. Good morning, Cathy. How are you keeping?
Hi, Greg. Enjoying the sunshine?
Yes, isn't it lovely? It's lovely when you wake up to it. It feels like the day. It feels like I actually woke up and walked out of the house this morning. I felt like I'd missed some of the day. Do you know what I mean? And then I heard people talking on Lee Gucci's show and they'd already been in for a swim and toweled off and here's me just getting into the car. But anyway, it is beautiful. Harry Walsh, former deputy editor at the Donegal News. Good morning to you, Harry. How are you keeping?
Good, thank you, Greg. It's for a beautiful sunny morning here in Ardragh too.
Excellent stuff. And Ben Harkins, chair of Ogra Fianna Fáil in Donegal, is with us as well. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Greg. How's things? Thanks for having me.
Where are you and what's the weather like?
I'm in Tearman and it is also very sunny. So delighted it's Friday. Looking forward to what should be a good weekend for Donegal people, I'm hoping.
Yeah, you'd swear we were completely international. You could throw a blanket over the four of us, if the truth be told. So the weather's not going to be much different, is it? Right, okay. We've got quite a bit to get through and a few things we added overnight. Simon Harris says the refusal of visas for 33 children who were due to come to Ireland and Donegal were refused to protect the kids. GEA Palestine had planned to bring the Palestinian children and young teenagers for a tour later this month. This would have included coming to Donegal and an appearance at a big game in Croke Park, I think the All-Ireland final, in fact. The organisers are of the view the plans were scuppered over Israeli pressure. The government seems to be concerned that the majority of the adults, or all the adults that were with these children, aren't their parents, and this goes against visa regulations. And as I say, this is all about protecting the children. What do you think? I'll start with you, if that's all right, Cathy.
I'm sort of heartbroken about this story, Greg, to be honest. You know, what we're witnessing every day unfolding on our phones, you know, is appalling. I think that there was a real chance for us to do something, I suppose, something positive, something good here for a small number of people to lift them out of this chaos and mess. I feel sometimes that, you know, this government, I've been really proud of this government's speeches on Gaza. But is it just speeches? Because we had a chance to do something real. You know, we had a chance to do something tangible and not just make a speech, that this would have actually impacted people's lives for the rest of their lives. And, you know, I remember there was a team of young footballers who came to this country a few years ago. Actually, one of those young players actually died not that long ago in an airstrike. And they talk about, you know, the reciprocal benefits to the community here in terms of learning about what's going on, the benefit to the parents. That will stay with them for the rest of their lives. So there was a chance to do something so tangible and life-affirming for these people. I don't understand why this can't be sorted out. I don't know. I don't know the background as to how, but they've had time. You know, there's been time that we know these people are coming. I've been reading for the last week about their plans.
Is it possible, though, TV cameras are following them. They would, of course, had a wonderful experience all across the country, not least here in Donegal, and would have been out in front of potentially 80,000 fans, you know, with the cameras following them. Was this blocked due to Israeli influence, that it would be seen as propaganda, that it would be bad for international relations? Was pressure put on the Irish government to refuse these visas?
Greg, I don't understand how propaganda could come into it. I mean, if it was to do with what we're seeing, surely what we're seeing is actually, you know, we don't need any more evidence of how awful this is.
Yeah, but this puts humanity to it. This puts a face to it. This makes the people real. They come from your phone onto the centre of the pitch in Croke Park. That would be maybe what they're...
I honestly, I mean, it's mind-boggling that this cannot be sorted out. I mean, there is still, I'm thinking there's still time, and I'm hoping against hope that sense prevails and that somebody within the Department of Justice or the Department of Foreign Affairs can sort this out. I mean, there was a time, you know, that if people were, you know, needed a passport at very short notice for a diplomatic mission, it could be sorted. Good heads coming together could sort this out. It's really, I think it's really important that we reach out this hand at this time and do this very small thing that we can as a nation for these young people and their families.
See, what doesn't wash with me, Harry, or not doesn't wash with me, what makes me question is the fact that you would have covered it yourself as well, Chernobyl children coming to this county in massive numbers. And I was just curious yesterday as to how that used to break down. They didn't have the mums and dads with them. It would be one chaperone, one person per 10 kids. That's around about how it worked, okay? So I don't think our child protection laws have changed greatly, and I'm not sure how recently what I've just stated refers to. But it means that the refusal based on the fact that these children don't have their parents with them doesn't wash, because there's precedent there. We know ourselves, the Chernobyl kids come over here and with far fewer chaperones.
Absolutely, Greg. It's a classic case of politicians flip-flopping and hiding behind bureaucracy to suit themselves. You know, I mean, if these people were from country A or country B that suited to our intents and purposes to come here, to be here in a flash. But then they're hiding behind, you know, bureaucracy and facts and figures. You know, they're saying that the chaperones are coming with them. Don't know enough about them. I mean, we don't have to go back too far to an awful lot of people coming into our county and our country that and therein lays a bigger problem. The general consensus is we don't know enough about a lot of these people coming into the country. So now all of a sudden, this was a good news story, a feel-good story. Local families taking them in different parts of the country, making them feel loved, making them feel, you know, to forget about the horrors of their homeland for a couple of weeks. And Simon Harris and the lads are just now flip-flopping, deciding, hiding behind bureaucracy, saying they can't come in.
But why, though, Harry, are we seeing firsthand what we hear of, you know, certain countries' influences on global matters? Were they concerned that the cameras... Like, the only reason I'm coming to that point is because I've over the course of the morning, thinking about things in the car, I've tried to eliminate every other reason. I've got counterpoints for every other reason, okay? Yeah. And it just has me arriving that someone said, look, this is going to look really bad on us. You know, make it not happen.
Yeah, well, it seems to be, I'm like yourself, I'm trying to figure it out myself, Greg, you know, but because it seems to be, from every possible angle, nothing more than a good news story. But obviously, some people don't think it's a good news story, and they carry more clout than you and I do.
Mm. Ben, what's your views?
Yeah, it's terrible, you know, like you'd imagine the children must be just heartbroken, even seeing, you know, the disappointment in the clubs in Dublin that had fundraised to get them over in that there. Like, I understand when there might be rules in that regarding guardians or whatever coming over, but you'd have thought with this aspect, this group, that the authorities, that the government could have made a more proactive bit of work and saying, you know, in the weeks up to this here point, saying that, you know, this needs to be changed, or maybe you need a different set of guardians, or you need this kind of paperwork, to turn around now a week before it's due to happen, especially given the whole itinerary was planned from the very top of the GAA. Jarlath Burns was to give this whole group a tour of Croke Park and that there, that this here would happen so close to it. I think as well, though, Greg, I want to say, like, this, to have these children over with links to Palestine GAA would have been fantastic. Like, I was watching Primetime last night, and they had a young Palestinian family who were over because one of the children lost a lot of his leg, and they're over seeking medical attention, and the fact that there are so many children in Palestine that need medical attention, they were told they were coming to Ireland and now aren't coming to Ireland, and the families that have been split up because of this here. And I think that there is something that would need to take a focus as well. Obviously, it'd be great if we could have the children over through Palestine GAA, but the children that need medical attention in Palestine and they can't get over, I think it is something that we've really dropped the ball on and needs to be looked at as well.
Yeah, Simon Harris says there is an appeals process. As I say, he says this is about child welfare issues, but as there is precedent there. He says it's about immigration laws. Also a suggestion that maybe some of them might try and stay, God forbid, Cathy.
Yeah, I think there's ways to sort this out, Greg. It's not beyond the capabilities of government, you know, and it's, I just don't understand why it's so last minute.
How does this work if a youth basketball team wants to come here, or how does it work if,
say for instance,
a 30 person squad of Italian basketball players, the youth team were to come here?
Yeah, I mean, I know that, you know, across like lots of communities, you know, children come to this country on exchange.
Yeah.
You know, you often get messages, you know, if you've got teenagers in your house, could you host a family and be vetted? You know, there's ways around this. I think that if the will is there, that's the bottom line is, if the will is there, this will happen. You know, we can see the government moves, you know, speedily when they really want to. So if this is gonna happen, it's got to happen in the next few days, and not let the bureaucracy, as Harry says.
Yeah, but there's no language coming for government that they're going to try and intervene in relation to this. If you read Simon Harris's quotes, he's very stand back. He's like going, we have systems, we have to respect the systems. There is an appeals process. There's no. This is the thing that also interests me about it. There is no. There is no sort of leadership intervention here. It's actually more as if to say, that's the process. We need to protect the process. Let's see what happens. So, which makes me wonder, is there a geopolitical element to this?
I
don't want to keep going down that road, Cathy,
yeah,
but
I can understand
all
that,
roads
Greg.
Lead that way.
Yeah, I do think that Simon Harris has been very vocal in every statement that he's made on Gaza. And for him now to take a standoffish approach on this, when there's a real tangible way, it does, to my mind, sound like flip-flopping and just washing your hands of something when there's the opportunity to do something real and not just words.
Mm, okay. Anything else from you, Harry or Ben?
Yeah, I think I might just come in there, Greg, say, like, I know what you're saying, like, you know, is this sort of maybe pressure from the Israeli government or something like that there? Like, the Israeli government have made clear what they think of Ireland, what they think of the Irish government, what they think of the Irish people. And, you know, so I think that I would struggle to see how they would influence it.
Because I think there's layers, right? So you will have a situation whereby it's perfectly, probably agreed, right, that Donald Trump will call Benjamin Netanyahu out and say, stop the bombs, this is crazy, what's going on? But at the same time, have lunch with him, twice over 2 days and shake hands and be the best in the world. There is certainly stuff that is the public face of everything. And then there's also the background stuff. Like, we could have gone much further in relation to the Occupied Territories Bill. It was very much watered down. Was it watered down to a point where it became tolerable? I don't know, because we're still obviously, we're still trading Israeli bonds, et cetera. So it's only sort of light touch stance we're taking.
Well, I think, you know, like I say, the Israeli government isn't represented in Ireland anymore because of the leadership that Ireland has taken on it, on a lot of things, from, you know, recognising Palestine to, you know, intervening in the International Court of Justice. I think those are positive steps. I think this would have been a very positive symbolic step, you know, given, I suppose, the amount of children that are here. I would hope that this is just a stumbling block. You know, I would hope that people have seen that there's very clear within the GAA community and within the wider Ireland community that people want this to happen, and hope that maybe this can be seen over this weekend, maybe that the government and the authorities can work now proactively to make it happen.
Yep, seems no appetite for that, Ben, but I do understand where you're coming from. Hi, Greg, says a listener, is it possible that the denial of visas for the Palestinian children may be more about the fact that the Israelis will prevent those kids from leaving, thus creating a political controversy again between Ireland and Israel? We need action against Israel's Zionist government, not just words. Another, these poor Palestinian children have suffered enough. They shouldn't have to... Okay, I'll come back to that. That's a bit overly tongue-in-cheek, just given what we're talking about. The bonfire that took place, I'm going to come to that in a second as well, actually, sorry. Another, sort out the children at home in Ireland first. That's never going to happen. The situation in Ireland is getting worse for our children, and I would love to see certainly those who might be angered by the thought of Palestinians coming here, actually redouble their efforts to try and improve the plight of the 200,000 children living here in poverty and the 40 or 50,000 per year that are abused. No Israeli pressure, it's American pressure, says a listener. Another, there's no restrictions on foreigners coming into the country. They land on planes all hours of the day and night. How can they be allowed in with no passports? Yet these children were denied entry. The whole thing is a farce, in my opinion. More from our panel and you at home, at work, wherever you are after this break. We're in the company of Ben Harkin, Cathy Donaghy and Harry Walsh. A listener says the bonfire that took place up in Tyrone last night was shocking and shouldn't have been let happen in any civilised society. And the ghastly thing of all is this hatred of migrants is coming from the descendants group of people who came over from Scotland on boats as planters in the 1600s and were giving land that was forcibly taken off the native population. So what they're talking about is a loyalist bonfire in Tyrone that was controversially topped with an effigy of refugees in a boat. It was set alight last night. The PSNI said earlier yesterday that they were investigating a hate incident in reference to the pyre at Moygashl on the outskirts of Dungannon. An Irish tricolour flag was also placed on the bonfire, which is among about 300 which will be burned, across last night and tonight in the region ahead of the Orange Order's annual 12th of July parades. Well, Ben Harkin, is this just part of the island's culture, or cultural makeup, sorry, or should such displays be banned and strictly enforced as well, I suppose, if you were to ban?
Yeah, well, like, I think the first thing to say on the Moygashl one is how across the community that there, you know, it was widely condemned. The Church of Ireland Archbishop said it was inhumane and deplorable. You know, Mike Nesbitt in the UUP said similar. It's just shocking, you know. And then you see maybe sort of a different bonfire in the Donegal Road in Belfast, which has come under sort of the PSNI wanted to take it down or reduce it, and then they were told they couldn't because it was essentially going to cause too much danger to the community.
The council wanted it down, and it was the PSNI that said it would cause too much danger to the community.
Well, I think they wanted to take it down, but that then they decided that it was going to be more dangerous to take it down than to leave it up. Like, it's just crazy because, again, it happens obviously at the same time every year. Like, we knew a week ago that something was going to appear on the top of the Moygashl bonfire. This isn't a surprise. There's always going to be something like this here. The fact that, you know, obviously there's some leaders in the community that have no interest in stopping this, but the fact that the PSNI let this year on year get to the stage where you're sort of held hostage every week, you know, they can't do anything because it's got to such a size, because, you know, tensions spike so much.
The Donegal Road, they've been gathering pallets for that and the other big one since February.
Absolutely. I seen that a woman on BBC last night said the children have been gathering stuff since Christmas to put in the bonfire and that. So, like, how it always this year just gets to this week, you know, where people say it's terrible. How did this happen? And then the PSNI or the authorities say, you know, we can't do anything about it because, you know, tensions are too high. It'll be too dangerous. It shouldn't get to this stage. I have no problem with people, you know.
Well, I'm going to go into Strabane and get myself a nice bag of Colombian coal, because why the hell am I burning those nuggets when this kind of crack's allowed to happen in the north? But, like, you know, if I posted something like that, a representation of people, and it's really, you know, they've gone to great lengths. If I posted something like that on Facebook, or actually even X, which is kind of the Wild West, it would be flagged, it would be taken down, and yet here we are allowing it physically before our eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I've seen the PSNI have labelled it a hate crime that's happened, but I don't know what sort of punishment that could lead to, or if there will be any. Like, I don't know who would be left to blame for this here effigy that goes up in the middle of the night. I know the people that organise it say that it's art. I don't know how you respond to that. I don't know how you respond to people that will put something up like that there and say that it's ours.
So what do we do? But we just tolerate it? Do we have
absolutely shouldn't tolerate, you know, but again, I just don't understand how the PSNI keep failing on this here, because again, it happens at the same time every year. We all know that the week before, this is going to happen. You know, you can schedule it. This time next year, we'll be saying, how did it happen? They just seem to want to stand off.
But every action has a reaction. You can imagine if, you know, the PSNI were going routinely into communities.
Absolutely. If they come in, especially this week, when tensions maybe are higher, when this is sort of all built up, that's why it has to be done before. That's why it has to be done in the months before, that they know that it just can't happen, you know, this year, that it can't get to that height, it can't get to that stage. But again, it just keeps happening, and there are definitely failings there in the authorities that allow this to keep happening.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Harry, I don't get it. I don't get it, to be honest with you, but that's probably historical ignorance on my behalf. I don't understand why this is so important, but clearly it is. It is a tough one because, you know, things can kick off very quickly if the PSNI intervene in certain ways.
Absolutely. That's my gashel. I mean, that's not pride. That's poison. There's no real other words for it. I mean, as Ben was saying, that all the politicians have come out and railed against it and what have you. And the DUP, they said bonfires should be a positive cultural celebration, and that the ban, you know, the burning flags, effigies, etc., should not take place. And that's very noble and very honourable and what have you. But the very same members of the DUP and other loyalist unionists with other groupings, they're leading this, you know. I mean, at the 12th of July, we all know the background, we all know what's happened, you know, the King William, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know, that's going back 400 odd years. And it's grand if that's, you know, if that's their, the Protestants, that's their kind of celebration, their annual celebration, like we made of St. Patrick's Day or what have you. You're right, Greg, it's hard for us, you know, we're very close to the border at the same time, we're a million miles away from it. And it's very hard to actually... There's an awful lot of grain here. Mm. You know,
Harry, because it's so complex. And I really don't fancy doing a ton of research in relation to it. I kind of disengage, which is, you know, probably not very good with my job, but I just find it, I just don't understand it. But at the same time, I don't want to stick my head up too far above the parapet and get it cleaned off either. That's just being honest.
No, exactly. And to use the air quotes, it's what the Protestant community do the 12th of July, and 95% of it's grand. But these, particularly the one in Moygashel and a couple of other bonfires, they're trying to one-upmanship each year. They're doing something bigger and better and more brasher than the previous year. And, you know, they're putting different effigies on top of it. They had, you know, they had different migrants, you know, and Jamie Brayson, I mean, who wouldn't be the most honourable of men, let us say. You know, he's calling it an artistic project, you know, with their cultural connotations.
Well, he says, and some people don't want to hear his voice, but I don't think that's helpful either. He says that this is, you know, you have bands at Glastonbury saying, you know, kill or death to the IDF. That's art. And it's taken for what it is, and then he's sticking this migrant's boat on top of this bonfire. That's just art, and you take it for what it is.
But we've seen, Greg, I suppose, sorry about him, but like we've seen the very strong response from the British establishment to that there. You know, we've seen what's happened with that, you know, with NECAP, what they've said with, you know, whatever, the death to IDF. Again, all those things there's been strong responses from the British establishment out there. In fact, there's no response really to what's happened in Moygashel from particularly the senior community leaders and the British establishment would say to me that's a big problem.
Kathy Donaghy.
Yeah, I have a problem with calling this culture or art, full stop. I mean, everyone would be tolerant of a culture. Bonfires, you know, the DUP statement said that it's part of the culture. This is not culture. This is a pyre of hate, and we have to call it out as such. The second thing that really, really bothers me about this is, you know, the police statement that it was almost better to leave what was on the Donegal Road than to go in. This is a complete failure of law. It's a breakdown of law. Mm. It made me think of the film Tombstone, where, you know, one of the bandidos says, law don't go around here. You mentioned a Western. It's like the Wild West. How can we have a functioning, you know, state that doesn't, you know, respond to the police? The police they feel like their hands are tied and they can't go in. You know, there's something seriously wrong here. And I do believe that that's a failure of politics as well. Yes, the DUP issued a statement about their culture and they didn't sit, but their local MLA and of the EUP and the DUP have said nothing. They have said absolutely nothing on this, which is an absolute, I can't understand how you can represent an area and allow this. And at the same time, your party leaders are issuing a statement saying we don't condone it. And obviously bonfires are part of the culture. It is not culture. Mm. It's an absolute pyre of hatred and has to be seen as that. And until I think political leaders in the North get around the table and say, you know, what is wrong here? We cannot allow this to happen year in, year out. It's not the first year. I think there was an effigy of Michelle O'Neill on top of these 1 year as well. And the tricolour burned as well. I mean, this is a failure.
The thing is about it too, Cathy, that bothers me most, to be honest with you, you know, if you want to get a group of old guys standing there swigging a bottle of beer watching this, that's fine. But it's going to be the 15, 16-year-old kids, the 10, 11, 12-year-old kids, the, you know, the babies in pushchairs watching this, and it's just filtering into another generation.
That's my problem with it, Greg. And I read a commentary on this morning where a mother was with her children on the street, and her comment was, isn't it fantastic? Mm. Now, a mother with children looking at this, I saw the pictures of that last night, and there was like a weird fascination that you can't look away from this image of what looks like people in a burning boat. It's so disgusting in every sense of the word. And yet I think there's a failure of leadership in Northern Ireland. The police are not, you know, I don't know what is going on here, but how does it get to the stage where these things, what height are they? Are they like 10, 12 feet high? How do we get to a point where they're that? You know, there has to be some rules and regulations. This second one on the Donegal Road is beside a hospital, you know, and power supplies and, you know,
asbestos.
How does it get to that point where now last minute saloon? It's a problem.
Yeah, a caller says, it's all about the culture, Greg. It's usually the Ivory Coast flag burning on top of the bonfire. God bless them. Have a great day. Simple solution, ban all these types of bonfires, put it into law, full stop. But I don't think the PSNI is equipped for that because we've seen with the recent spate of violence in the north and what have you, like they had to bring in police from outside Northern Ireland just to deal with two sort of hotspots. So I don't know what kind of resources they have. We wouldn't let a gang of Muslims burn a boat of white folks and call it culture and art. So how could you do so in reverse? I love how folks holding stop killing kids signs get locked up this week in the UK. Meanwhile, they let this crack continue in the north. The one I hate is, if you're anti-genocide and ethnic cleansing, you are branded anti-Semitic, anti-Semitic, continually played out. Israeli money runs the SE in the States. Well, I mean, there's also, I don't know what the views of the general population of Israel are. How are they allowed to light bonfires in the north, yet we can't even burn a paper here in Donegal or something would be after you? Well, the obvious answer to that is that it's two different jurisdictions. But I get exactly what you're saying. I kind of made the same point. Greg, the reason that the young Palestinians are not allowed to come is people like Alan Shatter would be opposed to them coming, as he's one of the politicians that support Israel since the beginning. Right, these poor Palestinian children have suffered enough, says the listener. They shouldn't have to go and watch a stupid Gaelic game. Take them somewhere fun like the beach. Well, it's our sport and it's fantastic. Okay, we're going to take a break, back with more from our panel very shortly. Right, you're very welcome back to the Friday panel here on the 9 till noon show. We have a great panel as always. Ben Harkin, Chair of O'Grafina Fall in Donegal, Harry Walsh, former Deputy Editor at the Donegal News, and Cathy Donaghy, journalist and author of Finding My Wild. Just a couple of quickies here. Donegal County Council's being urged to carry out a safety audit of Bad Eddie. The ship washed up on Mahara Clocher Beach, Gwydor, in the 1970s. The condition of that structure now has deteriorated in the intervening years, and it's said to be currently in a dangerous state with rusted nails exposed. Should it be fenced off? Should it be removed? Why don't we see the value in these things a little earlier on, maybe some years ago, and see what we could have done with it then? Cathy, what say you?
That's a good point, actually, isn't it, Greg? It's such an iconic image of that part of Donegal. I mean, I think, you know, it would be very unusual to see that beach now with Bad Eddie. It's so beautiful, and everybody would admire it. Surely there is a way with all of the technology and I would say lots of people would volunteer to help and experts would go in. Surely we don't need to fence it off. I mean, that would just ruin what is, you know, a very, very beautiful scene. There must be ways that we can make it safe without putting a fence around it.
could we not move it ashore somewhere and replace it with like an exact replica, you know, like made of a different material, so that it retains that and maybe even sort of becomes something in and of itself. And so we still have that iconic imagery, but it's locked in for future generations. I'm not sure what the implications are.
Do you not think, Greg, that there's an element of, if we do that, that you take away from the sort of the nature of what washed up there, the 100%, natural sense of...
But we should have. I talked about this 15 years ago. I'm sure at that point we could have put in stainless steel nails or something. I don't know what it is. We could have done something. We're just constantly talking about what we're going to do as it continues to deteriorate and not seem to be doing anything to protect it. I'm not sure. Listen, we could go to the moon, right? We can protect this structure, surely.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, there's a theme in some of the discussions that we've been having this morning, which is kind of interesting, that... Why is it always last minute that we realise, oh, this is going to absolutely, you know, be obliterated if we don't do something? And it's last minute saloon with everything. Can we not sort of realise this is going to happen?
No, because
it's going to move on.
There's been a campaign about the bridge in the old town in Letterkenny for years. Its historic nature is deteriorating. What happens is you get a few very vocal people that can see it. They bang the drum and say, if we don't do something now, it's going to be too late. Blah, blah. They're ignored. And next thing, it falls into the river or falls into disrepute. And then we say, well, why didn't we do something earlier? Because we often don't, Kathy, listen to the people who are, you know, are in real time making these exact arguments.
Yeah, it's a good point, especially with historic structures that, you know, that there is real value in these. And it's how we also value the old in our society, you know, the things that are there for generations. And it's up to, I suppose, maybe younger people to take the baton now and realise the value of them. And we don't sometimes realise the value of anything until it's gone, unfortunately.
Yeah, Harry Walsh, I think we're going to have to do something because, you know, it is only a matter of time before kids are clambering on it. Someone gets an old rusty nail 3 inches into their thigh or something, God forbid. But I know for a fact when I was a child, and to be honest with you, probably still to some extent now, I would want to run over there and clamber and explore and God knows even climb. So we can't sort of keep ignoring it. We're going to have to do one thing or other, Harry.
Exactly. And as Kathy rightly says, unfortunately, we just procrastinate and go on and go on. And meanwhile, it's forever getting worse. I mean, like, well, you can't put a fence around it. I mean, I'm not an engineer, but the fact is on sand-based, I'm sure the said fence would soon sink into the ether as well, you know. So I'm sure there's enough brains out there to do something, but do it quick rather than wait. You and I having this conversation 5 years' time. As you said, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, Greg, we've been talking about it, you know, and meanwhile, it's left to somebody else or some other task force, and therein lies the problem. These task forces and what have you, it's actually getting things done seems to be the problem.
And if the truth be told, the fence might be there to mitigate responsibility rather than actually making it any safer, if the truth be told, because you go straight over the fence and you have a look, but God forbid if anything happened, you go, well, we put a fence up.
Absolutely. You know, and that probably gives you another 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
leave the fence there.
It
and
doesn't remove the danger, per se, you know, and we do have to recognise that as well.
Yeah,
I think that was a good idea, Greg, about maybe having some kind of, you know, maybe a replica or something with the same materials. And I think it's important that the local community will be brought in, you know. I think that it's clear that maybe whatever authorities...
Well, it's young people. Kathy's passed the baton on to you, not that Kathy's old, but...
I have a lot on my plate now without trying to save Bad
time,
Eddie.
There's always room on the plate for Bad Eddie.
Yeah, I think it is important that... Listen, I know it's obviously a big tourist thing, but... It'd be important that the local community and the local people would have a say in what they think should happen to it. You know, it's on their doorstep.
Well, can you imagine if you were here 10 years ago and you were from Ontario and you come here and you got a picture with Bad Eddie and it was your special anniversary 15 years later and he says, we're going back to Donegal, and you went to the beach and it wasn't there. You would go, whoa, did they not see the value in this? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, that's how significant it is. You search Bad Eddie, go into Google Photos, and there are thousands upon thousands of
images. Oh, it's an iconic image of Donegal, so it is.
And that's exactly what it is. You know what? You've put your nail in the head there. It's actually, if you put together 100 pictures that represent our county, it's one of them, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And here we are procrastinating, as Harry said. Right, so Ben's not taking it on. Kathy, what else do we do?
Well, I think Ben makes a good point about the local community, you know, getting behind this. And I think they would. And I think it's so beloved that, you know, I mean, if you tried to have a GoFundMe campaign for Bad Eddie, I think, you know, you would have funds flown in from all over the world from those photographs around. But I'm thinking about that image of Donegal. You know, what is sort of, yes, our beaches, our blue flag beaches, I would say, the church at Dunluce and the Poison Glen, you know, that iconic image. I think Bad Eddie's one of them.
Yeah,
you know,
it
absolutely is. It encapsulates the wildness of our county, the sort of the, you know, that rural mystique.
Our relationship with the water.
Or absolutely, yeah. Us as a seafaring people. Also, you know that tradition of emigration and it encapsulates so much of who we are as a people.
The state of our health service.
Sorry?
The state of our health service, it encapsulates the nominee joke. And sorry, I'm being facetious.
That's another, yeah,
no,
that's
but I really think, and I think Ben and both you, Kathy, both picked up on the same point about local community. But this is local to all of us. You know, I think we all have a say in this as well. And I think, you know, we commission, you know, great structures left, right, and centre, and fantastic. We've got brilliant artists here. There must be something we can do to retain sort of. Retain what it is, even though what it is actually starting to deteriorate or has gone beyond any.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen, you know, technology that allows people to go in and excavate, you know, the most, you know, intricate structures all over the world. We've seen, look at what happened when you know, the Cathedral of Notre Dame burned down. Look at the way experts are able to restore. You know, there are experts with knowledge that can bring their skills to restore and save something like this. You know, it just takes the will and probably good people leading a campaign on this.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. But I do think the local authority has a big key role in sort of being the head of that. And bringing people together, because over generations people have tried, Kathy, to do exactly what you're talking about, but you know, it's like running in treacle, and I think the local authority needs to recognise the importance of it, you know, with even as part of tourism funds or what have you. Harry, I just think that, you know, if we think of other iconic things in other parts of the country, we'd be looking on even more aghast, actually. You know, when it's close to home, you kind of sort of accept it a little bit. But if there's, I can't think of an example at the moment, but if there was something down the country that was of such, you know, significance, you'd be going, are they crazy? Why aren't they doing something about that? And yet here we are.
Yeah, I mean, as Ben says, as you said earlier about hitting the rusty nail on the head, excuse expression, you know, but it's one of those ones that, it does beggar belief. You know, we're sitting here now, and as I said earlier on, hopefully we're not sitting here in 5 years' time talking about it. You know, somebody has to grab that nettle and run with it, you know, because it's 5 years' time, we don't know, will it still be there? Will any still be there?
But this conversation will only progress because of vandalism, a very serious injury, or a major storm. That's it, my
that's,
opinion.
Yes, that's sad but true. Next, you know.
Okay.
Yes.
Listen, guys, going to take a break, back with more from the panel after these. Harry, we've a yellow weather warning for temperatures, 27 during the day, 15 at night. Have we completely lost the run of ourselves, or do you think these weather warnings are justified? I mean, half the country is over in Spain baking at 42 degrees and we're up to high dough with 27. Is it the boy that cried wolf?
Absolutely, Greg. I mean, before I came on, I was didn't sleep that well last night, and I was up watching the full moon. It was absolutely glorious in the night sky, and stuff that we take for granted. You know, we get a couple of good days, and we literally do lose the run of ourselves. The weekend's gonna be nice, and put on a bit of sunblock, go out, swim in the sea, enjoy it for what it is, because we're already being told that next Monday and Tuesday there'll be plenty of rain again, and the farmers need not worry too much, you know. So we do. I mean, I wouldn't like to be in Spain or Portugal or wherever at 40 plus degrees. I lived in the States for a couple of years and the humidity would nearly kill you. And I lived in Australia as well, where the heat would nearly kill you. And I loved both places. There was an age in the stage where I was indestructible, so it didn't really bother me now. But
yeah,
you're right. It's one of those ones that. It's headlines, isn't it? You know, yellow warning, red warning, green warning, whatever kind of a warning.
I just think Mitterrand liked the attention, and I don't mean that badly at all, but because, Ben, you know, like, obviously my default position here is to go, yes, there are vulnerable people out there, but these are people that lived through, you know, if they're older people, they've lived through much hotter than this. And I just don't understand yellow weather warnings for temperatures in the high.
Yellow weather warnings have lost, I think, any sense of meaning, to be honest. You know, like, as in, it's so, I think we've been caught out so many times, you think there's a storm coming, you think a big heat wave. Listen, I think we can handle, you know, I was looking at there, what, 30 degrees, 29 degrees for an hour or two tomorrow. I think we should be well able to handle it. I think it's a good idea when sort of we're forecasting for warm weather and that there, that you have, you know, I seen last night sort of about warnings about water safety, things like when people are going out swimming and stuff like that there. That's a, yeah. I think that's a good thing, you know, but I think, you know, we can handle 28, 29 degrees for an hour or two tomorrow and get through it as a country.
Yeah, I, as I say, Cathy, I don't know what if your views diverge from the lads at all there, but what do you think?
No, I would agree with what you're all saying there, Greg. I suppose the one thing about warnings, and it's maybe something we take for granted in this country because we don't see that much of it, right? And that saying, you know, make hay while the sun shines. I mean, you know, when you live in a place like Donegal and you get a day like today, if you can take the time to go and do something, then now's the time to do it, because the rain could be lashing again on Monday, as Harry says. One thing that sort of slightly bothers me, and maybe it's a good thing to be aware of, is, you know, skin cancer is probably the most common cancer in this country.
11,000 people a year diagnosed,
yes,
with skin cancer.
Exactly, Greg. And, you know, oftentimes we go out and say, well, we're in Ireland, you know, how bad can it be? And you know what, the amount of times you'll come in and say, oh God, I should have had my sun cream on. Maybe it's just that we, you know, nudge to get the sun cream on a day like today. You know, I do think, though, that in time what we're going to see is our climate. We know that June was the hottest on record. It was the hottest June. And I feel like, you know, as climate change sort of moves in this general upwards direction in terms of heat, what we might find is that Ireland becomes this temperate tourist destination instead of people going to Spain, because we also know that experts are suggesting that in 50 years' time, people won't be able to live in Madrid.
I know people that are choosing different parts of Europe because the southern part of Europe is just too warm for them. Not to mention, too, obviously, that there is predictions also that we'd see an influx of climate refugees as well, because of our central location in Europe. We're neither too cold nor we're neither too hot. But you're I think you and Ben hitting something there. What does yellow mean? You know, but if you are use it as an opportunity, or use the weather forecast as an opportunity to briefly but clearly articulate looking after your skin and to be careful in the water, that's far more useful than just naming a colour. What does the colour even indicate?
That's a true point.
I actually genuinely don't know what the advice is in a yellow warning. I mean, I think I can figure it out, but I don't know what Metairn are trying to indicate.
I'm not sure either. I think maybe we could do with perhaps that being explained to us a little bit better. I think, you know, if you go to the beach today, if you go to a blue flag beach, if you go to Kildaff, you know, what you'll notice on the life guards board is you'll see what conditions are like. You'll see the UV index. You'll see all that. I find that really helpful because I kind of, you know, I know, and it's spelled out for me. I think you're right. We could probably do with understanding a bit better. If it's not red warning, do we pay attention? You know,
and also too, I did note some unions, and I can't remember which one, Harry. I don't know what you think about this. They were sort of saying that on a yellow warning, it was mostly for bad weather, but it might be for good weather too. On a yellow warning, you should have the choice to work from home, and on a red warning, you shouldn't have to go to work at all. Maybe that's what it's all about, Harry.
Absolutely. I second that, Greg.
All right. Come here. Harry Walsh, thanks so much for all of your time this morning. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too, Greg.
Take care. Bye-bye. Cathy, fantastic to speak to you and see you again. Take care of yourself.
Thank you, Greg.
Bye-bye. Ben Harkin, look after yourself. Thanks so much, buddy.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, have a good weekend, you. All right, thanks so much for that. Lots we didn't get to, but thank you to Ben Harkin, Cathy Donaghy, Harry Walsh there. A caller says, and I'll throw this out to the listeners, has the panel or listeners any view, which is very important for our county, with the referee on Sunday? Paul Fallon, he gave us nothing in a game against Mayo, so hopefully it doesn't come down to decisions. Well, I suppose I understand where you're coming from. I know I'd imagine any manager is saying, look, let's take the decision out of the referee's hands, to use a boxing analogy. A caller says, burning Roman Catholic effigies Sinn Féin and SDLP posters, tricolours, burn all tags, etc. is a hate crime that was normalised for some reason. Unionist leaders in the Orange Order has failed badly, in my opinion. Another is Pat the Cope running for president. Headline on April 1st, caption, unless he gets LUH sorted and Fianna Fáil have failed miserably so far, in my opinion, says the listener. Well, I mean, he's there is some speculation, whether it's kite flying or not, that his name has been... the grassroots of Fianna Fáil are keen to put him forward. Why not, I suppose? Mairead McGuinness is certainly in there. Are Fianna Fáil going to get behind Mairead McGuinness, perhaps? Sinn Féin have yet to sort of say who they're pitching for. Mary Lou McDonald not ruling herself out of the equation yet. And really, the runners and riders only kind of emerging now. We'll have plenty of time to chat about that, of course. Right, we have a break to take, and then we'll have the news and obituary notices, and then we'll be back with more on this show afterwards.